Hello and welcome to the Mr. Brown podcast, where I reflect on my journey as an early career teacher, with a special focus on mental health. I am your host, James Brown. Salutations. I'm recording this episode 1 week before the end of term, and it's been a long old term. It's been a 7-weeker. We've had an 8-weeker followed by a 7-weeker. And suffice to say, I'm very much looking forward to Christmas. When I first started as a trainee, when exchanging pleasantries and small talk with colleagues, I'd often hear teachers say, "Oh, I'm so looking forward to the weekend," or "I'm so looking forward to the break." And I used to think, does that mean that you don't enjoy your job? If you're always looking forward to the next time you don't have to do your job, does that mean you're not enjoying your job? And that was a naive view. I have now joined the ranks of teachers who look forward to the weekend and who look forward to the break. And it has nothing to do with whether I enjoy my job or not, because I love my job. It's more to do with the fact that the job is a tiring one. And it's nice to have a rest. And when you feel you've worked really hard, I feel that you can enjoy having a rest even more. So yes, I'm very much looking forward to Christmas. The first thing I'd like to discuss today is slang. So I've learnt some new words from my students. Some new words and phrases. The first one, charge it. Now, as far as I can tell, if a student says to another student, or indeed to a member of staff, which of course shouldn't be happening, but if a student uses the phrase charge it, what they mean is don't make a fuss. So, for example, I've heard it in the following context. Perhaps I've given a student a C1, which is the lowest rung on our consequence ladder. It's just a warning. And they start making a fuss. Another student might say, charge it. That means don't make a fuss. Because making a fuss could be a fast track to a C2. We just don't know. So that's the first one, charge it. The second one is 8, as in the past tense of eat. So A-T-E. And apparently if you say someone ate, that means that they have slayed. Now, I know that's slang as well, but it's one I'm more familiar with. It means that they've done a good job at something and perhaps put on a bit of a performance whilst doing so. One of my year 10s explained this term to me, and the next time she answered a question, I said that she ate that, and apparently that was the correct usage, and she was very impressed. I ran this past my partner, and she was aware of this already. And apparently you can extend it to say, ate and left no crumbs. That's the slightly extended version of the phrase. If you say that someone ate and left no crumbs, that's even better than just eating. So yes, I've learnt some slang. And I do use it on occasion with my students, which is always met with delight and amazement sometimes. And I think that's nice for developing relationships with students. That said, in my school, we also try to encourage formal talk. We feel that it's our obligation as teachers to teach and encourage our students to talk in a formal, more academic way. The sort of way they might speak in a job interview, for example. And that couldn't be further from charge it and ate and left no crumbs. But formal talk is, it does seem to be talk at a professional arm's length. There's a distance between you and someone with whom you're having formal talk. And so it's less conducive to building relationships. I'd say it even puts up barriers to those sorts of relationships if you only ever conversed in a very formal, stiff kind of way. So I'm sure there's a compromise to be struck here. There are occasions perhaps where you can sneak in a bit of student slang and communicate with them in their vernacular in order to build those positive relationships, and then perhaps for the rest of the time try to be a bit more formal. And so I'd be interested to hear what you do with student slang. I mean, it's impossible to avoid. I regularly hear students using words in funny ways that I don't quite understand. But then through exposure, I start to get the idea. I'm like, oh, that's what that means. Or then every so often, a student might explain it explicitly. Once you are familiar with these, with the student vernacular, what do you do with it? Do you use it in the same way that I have on a few occasions? Or would you avoid it? I'd be interested to hear. Now, the second thing I'd like to discuss today. My school has some sort of connection with the University of Warwick, who have been conducting some maths research. And as part of this research, they wanted us to give our Year 11 Foundation students a paper to complete. They would then take these papers away and conduct some sort of analysis. I'm not sure what the output's going to be. But anyway, I had this Year 11 lesson last week where we completed this paper. Now, we do complete lots of exam papers in our lessons. I feel it's the best way to prepare for doing an exam paper is to do lots of exam papers. So they're used to this. But an important difference was that on the front of this paper that came from Warwick, they had to fill in a few extra details. They had to fill in their name, they had to fill in their teacher name, and then they also had to fill in their set. And so I had a student say, "Sir, what set are we?" I said, 11A7. He responded, "I'm in set 7. And I said, "Yes." And then he said, "Oh, I'm so stupid," which broke my heart. I responded quickly. I said, "You are not stupid, nor is anyone else in this room," because I could see a few other concerned faces. I said, "No one in this room is stupid." One girl, very cleverly, said, "Sir, if you think that, if you think that no one in this room is stupid, then you're the stupid one." And so now we were having this discussion about whether my students in this class were stupid. And so I had a fight on my hands, really, because I'm not going to lay down and let my students feel that they're stupid. I think I would have failed as a teacher if that's what my students felt. So I said, "You're not stupid. And anyway, mathematical intelligence is only one form of academic intelligence. There are many others." To which a couple of my students said, "But sir, we're in bottom set for everything." And I was like, okay, where do I go from here? So I said, "Well, academic intelligence, more broadly speaking, again, is only one type of intelligence. There's other types of intelligence as well. There's also emotional intelligence, for example." And I also said, "Besides, how academically intelligent someone is says nothing important about them as a person. It tells you nothing about their character. It doesn't tell you whether they're brave or honest or kind or a good friend. And these are the things that really matter." And this reminded me of a letter I once read, and I'm going to try to find it now. Okay, I'm struggling to find the letter itself, so instead I'm going to read to you just a few excerpts from this book, Understanding Character Education, Approaches, Applications and Issues by Paul Watts, Michael Fullard and Andrew Peterson. It's in the very first paragraph of the introduction. So, "Over recent years, many school leaders, teachers and others interested in education have suggested that certain tests, for example SATs, can take away from or neglect the true academic and personal worth of pupils. In one such letter that made headline news," this was the letter I was trying to find but couldn't, "sent by a head teacher in England to primary school pupils before their standard assessment tests, It was made clear to pupils that the tests could not reflect everything that makes each one of them special and unique. Among the range of qualities cited as not being covered by the SATs were: they do not know that your friends can count on you to be there for them, and that you are kind, trustworthy, and thoughtful, and that every day you try to be the very best person that you can be. The letter ended by saying, "Remember, educating the mind without educating the heart is no education at all, as Aristotle said." And I stand by that. I do believe that academic education is important, but it's not the be-all and end-all. I think that a list of GCSE qualifications tells you very little about a person. Now, speaking about those more virtuous aspects of a person, I had to give my year nines a telling off this week, and they didn't know it was a telling off until right near the end, so I felt it was quite a good telling off. It was a surprise telling off. I had been away Thursday morning. Me and a colleague had been to visit a school in Birmingham, and so cover had to be arranged for my year nine class, and this is the first time this year. They've never had a cover teacher before Thursday. And they did not behave especially well. They were so noisy, in fact, that the teacher in the neighbouring classroom had to come in several times and ended up keeping the entire class behind at lunch for 10 minutes because they had been so noisy. And I heard various reports of other poor behaviour that had happened during that cover lesson. And so I started the following lesson on the Friday when I was back by putting the word integer up on the board. And I said, "What does this mean?" I thought they'd know straight away. It took several attempts, so this has actually highlighted something I should probably go back and address as a maths teacher. But anyway, someone got it on the third or fourth attempt. An integer is a whole number. Then below the word integer, I wrote the word integrity. These two words having a common origin. I then asked, "Okay, well, what does, if integer means a whole number, what does integrity mean? What does it mean for a person to have integrity?" And again, we kind of fished about for a while and eventually landed on the idea that for a person to have integrity was for a person to be a whole person, just in the same way an integer is a whole number. And what's the opposite of a whole person? Well, it would be a two-faced person. Someone who acts one way with one person and in a completely different way when they're with a different person. And then I said, okay, so if that's what it is for an individual to have integrity, it's to behave in the same way regardless of the situation and regardless of who they're with, what might it be for a class to have integrity? One boy said, "Oh, I think I know where you're going with this now, sir." And there were a few sheepish faces around the room. And so we had a discussion and we decided that for a class to have integrity would be for them to behave in exactly the same way, regardless of which teacher it was in front of them, whether it was me or anyone else. And I said to them, "I thought I did have a class with integrity. And the misbehaviour I heard about on Thursday made me sad because perhaps instead I have a two-faced class. And that's a very upsetting thought." And so I said that the next time they have the opportunity to demonstrate integrity and to behave with another teacher in precisely the same way they would behave with me, that's exactly what I expect them to do. And so that was the telling off. And I was quite proud of it. I managed to link it to the maths curriculum. And I didn't shout at anyone. I didn't dish out any consequences. But I stressed that I was disappointed. I stressed that their behaviour made me sad. And it did. So fingers crossed they won't do it again. We'll see. We'll find out whether the emotional manipulation has worked. We'll see. Now I've got two more things to talk about briefly today. Before then, however, my usual Patreon plea. This episode took 2 to 3 hours to produce, and I produce 2 episodes a month, So that's 4 to 6 hours of work I put into this podcast a month. If you feel that that work is worth at least the price of a coffee, £2 to £3 once a month, then please consider signing up and becoming a member on my Patreon page. And you can make a contribution towards helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. It doesn't cost a lot, but any contribution is greatly appreciated. And as an additional extra incentive, I also post videos of my recording sessions 1 week before the episode is released. As always, I'll leave the link to the Patreon page in the show notes. Thank you ever so much. Now on with the episode. I want to talk about planning. During my training year, so a couple of years ago now, I would do all of my planning for the week on a Sunday morning, and it would often run into the afternoon, and on a few occasions it ran into the evening. My Sundays were miserable, and I used to think, is this what my weekends are going to look like from now on for the rest of my life, or at least for as long as I'm a teacher? Which was a scary thought. I didn't like the thought of that at all, and it was a bit depressing at times. The closest I ever got to having a breakdown in my training year was on a Sunday when I was planning lessons. And you might think, well, why try to plan a whole week's worth of lessons on a Sunday? Why not just do it on the day, like plan on the morning for that day, as I know a lot of teachers do? I guess I was always just a little bit worried that I'd run out of time, or I couldn't find something, or perhaps the office would be busy and I'd struggle to concentrate. So I just chose to do it on a Sunday. And it was a bit miserable, but it worked. And as I've become a more efficient teacher, I found myself being able to plan more and more in the week, which gives me less and less to do on a Sunday. And there were a few occasions last year where I got all of my planning done in the week and had nothing at all to do on the Sunday, which was amazing. Like, as far as I was concerned, that was such progress. I'd reclaimed my weekends, which was just brilliant. Because at one point I thought I'd never get there. But no, here I was, having planned all my lessons for the following week, in the week, and had my weekend back. But, and this is a big but, I then started slipping in to planning the following week as well. And I've gotten to a stage this year where I've managed to plan all of the following week as well. So I'm 2 weeks ahead in terms of my planning. And what did I do next? I started to slip into planning 3 weeks ahead. And so all of a sudden, that stress, which I thought I had escaped, has returned. But it's no longer about planning for the upcoming week. It's morphed into planning for 3 weeks ahead, which is just absurd. There is no reason to be stressing about a lesson that is 3 weeks from now. And so I'm trying to rein this back in because I don't believe it's healthy at all. I think having the next week planned and then knowing what you're doing for the week after that. So yeah, I guess I should explain this distinction. I think deciding what you're going to teach in each lesson is the first step of planning. And then planning those lessons. So getting your resources and your PowerPoints ready for those lessons is the next step of planning. So yeah, I think that having all of that planning done for the following week is good. I'd be perfectly content, very happy, in fact, with that. And then knowing what you're going to teach in each lesson for the following week, but perhaps not having all the planning done, is good. I think that's a good place to be in, especially when it comes to sorting resources and sending printing to repro. Giving the repro person as much time as possible to get the printing done, I always think is a good thing. So I think that's good. But to go any further ahead than that is silly. And I've been stressing about it, and that means that I'm silly, and I'm desperately trying to rein it back in. Because it's very much rooted in anxiety. So maybe it's even some sort of very mild PTSD. You know, I used to stress so much about not having lessons planned in time, that I would sacrifice my entire Sunday to planning. Like, even now, maybe I've got this little fear, like, in the back of my head that thinks, oh, I know the lesson that I'm currently planning is 3 weeks from now, but what if I run out of time between now and then to get this lesson planned? It's absurd. I need to exercise that belief from myself because it's causing me a lot of undue stress. Well, not a lot. At no point have I been as stressed about a lesson that's 3 weeks from now as I was back in the day when I was planning on a Sunday for the upcoming week. I've never reached that level of stress, but it is just silly. And it takes up time during the week at school, and that's time that I could better spend doing other things. Like, it'd be so silly to sit during a free and spend an hour planning lessons that aren't going to happen for 3 weeks, when I could be doing a learning walk or doing something more constructive or speaking to colleagues. So yes, I'm trying to get that under control. I'm trying to stop anxiety being the driving force behind my productivity. I want it to be something else instead. What drives your productivity? I'd be very interested to hear. Now, one final thing. A funny story. Yesterday, it was a Year 7 lesson, and a boy turned to me and said, one-to-one, "Sir, will we ever have a prostitute in maths?" I seemed to run through about 3 or 4 different possible reactions to this question in my head. I didn't know whether to laugh or be annoyed, but I stuck with being bemused, so I kept a straight face and said, "What do you mean by that?" And he said, "Like, when you're away and we have a different teacher instead." And I said, "Oh, you mean, will you ever have a substitute in maths?" And he said, yeah, substitute. And I said, "Oh, well, it could happen one day, I don't know." And he was like, "Oh, okay, fair enough." And he went back to his work. And I heard the student sat next to him say to him, "Do you know what you just asked, sir?" Bless him. With that, I will leave you. This will be the last episode that I record of 2023. And the next episode will probably be 1 week after I return to school. So it'll be 4 weeks or so from now, 3 weeks or so from when this episode is aired. But I very much look forward to speaking again then, and have a lovely Christmas and New Year. If you enjoyed this episode, please spread the word in person and on social media. You can follow me on Twitter at MrBrownPod or email MrBrownPod@gmail.com. Please subscribe, rate and review in your directory of choice. Please also consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/MrBrownPod and helping me cover the cost of producing the podcast. Thank you, and talk again soon.